So it's 10:30 and it's time for Humboldt Baywatch here on KHUM. And I'm so excited today because I feel like this is maybe the first time that I've put a request in and Carol Vandermeer is delivering. How's it going, Carol?
It's going great. It's going great. Yes, you asked for it, Midge, last time when we were chatting about Pacific chorus frogs, and I mentioned that predaceous diving beetles may munch on the little tadpoles. You said, what? So you asked for it, you got it. We're going to talk about predaceous diving beetles today.
I'm excited to talk about them because I was a person who, growing up, hated bugs. I thought they were gross. I didn't want their bodies to touch me. I didn't like their legs, whatever. And then something switched in me, and now I love an insect. I love to watch them. I love to think about how different their little lives are than ours. And in particular, I love a beetle. And I'm not the only one who loves a beetle. I remember I took a class and there was some quote about like God having an inordinate obsession with beetles, or there's some quote, let's see. Oh, an inordinate fondness for beetles because there's just so many. They make up like a quarter of all animal species or something, right?
That's right. A quarter of, all species are beetles.
Not just insect, all species.
Not just, all species. So, Coleoptera is the order that beetles are in. And so there are lots of different kinds of beetles, from adorable little ladybug beetles mm-hmm. to those amazing, staghorn beetles, all kinds of stuff. So, they are everywhere. And what's really characteristic of beetles is they have these kind of sheaths that cover their wings. They can fly, as you know. If you hold up a ladybug and watch them crawl around, they will fly, but they have to open up those outer hard covers. And that's really, in addition to being an insect, that's what distinguishes them from other insects.
So I looked up the predaceous diving beetle because I was curious, and I want to talk about this, but I may be let down horribly here because while I do love insects, is a cockroach a beetle?
A cockroach. Oh my gosh. I hadn't even thought about a cockroach lately. I believe so.
They look a little like one. I saw it and I went, oh no.
Like, you caught me off guard on that one.
No, sorry. I just looked and I saw its legs and, I just was like, oh no. Cause I love all insects except the major, the cockroach, the mosquito, the flea, and the tick. Those ones are not my friends. They do not belong anywhere near me. And so I saw that and I went, oh crap, I wonder if a cockroach is a beetle. But that is not what we're talking about today. I just saw it and was wondering.
Right. Yeah, it's so funny. I was just kind of looking at it and it says at first glance they are, but they are not beetles, actually. Okay. But we'll talk about that another time.
Okay.
How about that?
let's go with the predaceous
diving
beetle.
They do have a quick look, but no, yes, they are not. So I want to be sure that I stand corrected there.
Okay.
Well, predaceous diving beetles, I've always been I don't know why I've been so fascinated with them. I think from my early workings as a naturalist, one of my favorite things to do as a naturalist is take one of those little, like aquarium dip nets and just dip into the various freshwater ponds that we have around here. Back in the Midwest, we would do it. And it's amazing because there's a whole nother world of little things swimming around in there, including other kinds of beetles and mosquito larvae. I actually think mosquito larvae are pretty fascinating to look at under a scope. So they have their role too. But you'll be happy to know that predaceous diving beetle larvae, one of their big prey items are mosquito larvae. So they help control mosquitoes. So that makes them even a better friend to you, I imagine.
Uh-huh.
But they are so cool. Great. They're also called great diving beetles. They are pretty large. They are like an inch to an inch and a half. So they're pretty beefy beetles. And they've, of course, have got all kinds of cool adaptations for their life in the water. They have no gills, but they've got a cool way of diving. They have to come up to the surface and they grab a bubble of air and it's almost like a little scuba tank for them. Mm-hmm. And then they could go dive and they're able to absorb that air and it can last like 30 minutes. They can go diving with their little bubble of air that's trapped under their wings, kind of at their hind end, that allows them to do their work and prey on their prey items, you know, which can be little tiny fish. They even will eat some carrion. But yeah, I think that's pretty cool. They don't have gills, but they do have this ability to kind of grab a bubble of air and go for it.
That's super cool.
It is super cool. And they have these feathered rear legs, and they're feathered so that they can act like little oars. So if you Google them and watch a video of them just kind of racing around looking for their prey, and these oars kind of paddle synchronistically versus some other kinds of beetles, you know, that might have that don't paddle together. So that's one characteristic of the diving beetles. And they have short little mandibles for munching on their prey, and their larvae are called, I think they call them water tigers, and they've got great big, like scythe like mandibles that grab their prey, and they're pretty voracious as well. But they have kind of little gills on their tail that help them breathe. They have to come up to the surface to get some air. So kind of interesting. They're in this suborder Dytiscidae, which comes from a Greek word meaning able to dive. So I think that's kind of cool.
It's cool that they're able to dive with air in them, because you would think that that would make them too buoyant. So they must be pretty strong in the way that their little feather legs must be pretty strong to push them down.
Yeah, I think they're pretty strong. I even read that some species, of course, there are like, I just read there's like 3,000 aquatic types of diving beetles, but some species actually have little suckers on their front legs that allow them to kind of cling to the rocks and walk around. So yeah, I imagine there is a balance that has to be struck between having that big bubble that's feeding them air and being too buoyant. But yeah, they're pretty neat. And it's usually a treat, you know, because you don't see these things typically. You're walking by a pond and you don't often have the right scooper with you or happen to take the right dip. But I remember a few years ago, I was walking in the dunes, probably around this time of year, after a wet year, and we've had a pretty wet year. There's some little standing freshwater ponds before you get out to the ocean. And I remember seeing one out there going, whoa, it's a diving beetle. Mm-hmm. So they're one of those cool treats to see.
So when you say that you saw one in a little standing water bit, I assume that means that they're able to move around on land to get to these places, right? Like if there's standing water, then that means that somehow one has traveled to it. So are they living on land and then just feeding underwater?
I think they're living most of their lives in the water, but they can disperse by using their wings. They have wings and they can, populate other areas of water habitat, because that is really what they are adapted to do, is to hunt aquatic creatures.
Well, and it's obvious when you see the picture of the larva, which they call it, like a water tiger or something. And that thing looks fierce. That looks like a fierce little bug.
That actually even looks, I think as I was reading, you know, with their big mandibles, they could be even more vicious, you know, than the diving beetles themselves. But it's pretty neat when you find them. I've always liked aquatic beetles. There's like little whirligig beetles. There's all kinds of them out there. It's pretty neat. And then I read that they've actually have a long history of being in some cultures are a food source. Humans eat them, especially in Japan and China. But I think I read that the, fossilized dung called coprolites, and they found evidence of early cultures, and those wing covers are pretty, thick with chitin, so they preserve more easily of, beetles and being a food source, important food source.
Well, we all eat beetles in dye, right? Isn't a lot of dye made out of beetle wings?
I have heard that. I am not as familiar with that, but yes, I definitely remember that.
Yeah.
I probably know more than I.
Well, it's the reason that I think that is interesting is because there's this conversation about, as less land and water and resources exist. People are going to have to move to eating bugs, and lots of cultures already eat bugs. And people think, oh, that's so gross. But it's like, you're already eating bugs in different ways, and you're already eating things that are very questionable. And it's funny that bugs, for some reason, insects are this, like, at least here, you know, and in the general, you know, American culture, it's like, ew, but I don't really see what's so gross about eating a bug. To me, that seems like a abundant resource. And honestly, I've had them, you know, fried up in Mexico, little chipolinas or whatever, and they're delicious. Yeah, I don't mind putting it in there.
I have yet to eat a bug. I should really do that one of these times. But you're right. There is sort of a cultural block for doing that.
There are. But yeah, they're good. I will say I ate a tarantula in Indonesia, and I did not like it. I will say that was the gooey center. It was fried with a gooey center on a stick. And I will say that was no for me. I will not do that one again, but they are, you know, a food source. But so, talking about food sources, you said that they're eating little frog tadpoles. That's what got me, is I was like, wait, a beetle is eating a tadpole? Like, these things must be predators.
They are predators. And I guess it's largely the larva that feed, that tadpoles are a very important food source for the larva of the diving beetles. And so, you know, nationwide, with, you know, wetlands being drained, that gets to be sort of a threat to these species as we lose habitat. That's kind of a resounding theme. We must keep diverse habitat, or we're going to lose all these cool things that enthrall us, like predaceous diving beetles.
And I do see, when you go to their little, like, even just their Wikipedia page, it says conservation. And so you would think, you know, beetle isn't the number one thing that we think about when it comes to conservation. But, like, you know, I don't know if it's considered, like, indication, or, you know, like, indicator species or anything like that. But it's those little ones that go, you know, that go early.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. You don't think about if the wetlands are drained and you don't have so many tadpoles and frogs out there breeding, that is going to impact other species, you know, predators and everything in the food chain. So, yeah, you gotta keep it all, because you never know. So that's my resounding mantra: diversity, having wet places, dry places, forests, you know, old growth, all kinds of things is what helps keep that fascinating diversity of life going.
Well, and I appreciate that there's people, you know, like you, who go, oh, one of my favorite things is to dip, you know, take one of those little dippers. You know, you think about a naturalist being like, oh, we're going to see otters. And it's like, no, you want to dip and see what's underneath the little things.
The little things. There are so many cool little things, and algae and little Daphne water shrimp, you know, flying around by you. And then you might find a beetle larva. It goes on and on. So I haven't, you know, I'll confess, I haven't dipped in a little while. So I'm all inspired now, especially now that we have some cool ponds here after this wet season that we've had. So it's going to provide plenty of food and fodder for beetles and birds and all kinds of things.
So if somebody wanted to do a dip, that seems like something that somebody could easily, you know, you don't need like a microscope. You don't need to go somewhere crazy. Could you just get a little water dipper and, you know, maybe like take your kid out and look and put them back?
I'll tell you, one of my favorite tools for dipping. Well, first of all, if you have like a little white plastic tray or a white container, that white background helps you see these things that are swimming. Hmm. So you try to dip in there and dump out, have a little water from the water source you're looking at, and you dip in, and you might get a lot of pond weed and duckweed and things, but try to shake out some of the little critters you see moving around, and you can just watch them swimming in their different styles of swimming on a white background. But if you want to go a little further, you can get what I call a bug box. It's a clear little box with a magnifier on the top. And I will say, you know, shameless plug, I do believe that Friends of the Dunes still carries those, or you could go online and get them. They're just a little plastic box. What's cool is you can carry them with you anywhere. You could look at a beetle crawling on a flower and gently scoop it into the box, look at it, and then, of course, always put them back in the habitat where you found them. It's just a short-term, closer look. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I've got a little portable dissecting scope that I can take with me out there because I'm way nerdy about it. But you don't have to have that to really enjoy and be enthralled by all the cool things that you could see. But in our little ponds, just put them all back unharmed, and you'll be the better for it.
Yeah, unharmed, but you know, they're being observed. And again, maybe you want to do it with a kid, maybe you want to do it yourself, but all it takes is, sure, it's a temporary little, you know, vacation, a very scary vacation possibly for the little critters that you pick up. But in the long term, then you're thinking about them, and then maybe, you know, you're more careful when you walk. Maybe you talk about it to a friend and then they look at them, and then, you know, it's for the greater good to yeah, you know, delay them on their little journey for a while.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a fun thing to do as we're coming close to the official first day of spring, and the spring equinox is coming up soon. So
is it
get
really?
Out there, enjoy. Yes. The 21st typically marks the spring equinox, but I want to put a little plug in. Friends of the Dunes is having a spring equinox celebration, celebrating the changing seasons this Saturday for families, and it'll be family friendly and bilingual at the Nature Center on Saturday from 10 to 1. And so there's going to be you know, it's really for families with younger children, so it's fun to get out there. There'll be a scavenger hunt and flower themed crafts and all kinds of things to celebrate our changing seasons.
Holy cow, Carol, you just gave me a reason to push through. I can't believe the equinox. I knew it was coming, but I'm
coming,
like,
it's coming. The 21st is usually the first day of spring with the even day and even amounts of night. And then then we head towards longer days and mm-hmm. shorter nights mm-hmm. towards the summer solstice. And then we just keep going around sun. So mm-hmm. it keeps rolling.
Yeah. I'm like, let's don't get to summer solstice yet. Let's don't, because then that marks it going backwards again. I like this going forward. You know, we finally have adjusted to the time change. It takes a day or two, you know, to get used to
yeah,
it. And
it does.
I'm just so happy.
You can make it. Spring is coming.
Yeah, I love to hear it. So I love to hear too about ways that the community can get out and kind of celebrate together. And again, just always a good reminder that we're part of, you know, this ecosystem and part of this community, and it's a good reminder. So I'm glad that you always put these little plugs in, especially like family friendly ones, getting the kids used to getting out and celebrating the natural world.
Yes, definitely. And Friends of Dunes has got a great venue for doing that. So just go to their website if you want more info, just friendsofthedunes.org.
Now, do we have a little song to celebrate the Beatles?
Diving Beatles?
Yeah, well, you know, there's definitely...
Diving Beatles, yes. I definitely have a Diving Beatles song.
Good, yeah.
How could we not?
Yeah.
Yellow Submarine.
Exactly. I was going to say, you know, there's somewhere right when I said, is there a song? I was like, I mean, there is a song. Considering every time I type in something wondering about Beatles, I type it Beatles every single time. So I wondered if this is where we would go today.
Oh, how could we not? It's a song about diving beetles in the Yellow Submarine. So had to do it.
Sometimes things are just too right. So I appreciate you taking the time. You brought up a predaceous diving beetle. I said, I got to know about this. So I appreciate, I play your song request, but you kind of, that was my like animal request, my insect request. Yeah. So I appreciate it.
All right. Good. That was fun. That was very fun. Just keep those requests coming.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Carol.
Alrighty. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a great day.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea. And he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed unto the sun till we found the Sea of band begins to play.